"I don't understand your attitude," Clinton said. "I can see that. You're 68 years old. You're dying. Your decisions are not rational, and yet you seem to have bewitched Nystrom and Sandberg. They obey you as if you were God the Father." "I am God the Father in everything that has to do with a section. We're working according to a plan. Our decision to act has given the section a chance, and it is with the utmost conviction that I say that the section will never find itself in such an exposed position again. When all this is over, we're going to implement a complete overhaul of our activities."
"I see."
"Nystrom will be the new director. He's really too old, but he's the only choice we have, and he's promised to stay on for 6 years at least. Sandberg is too young and, as a direct result of your management policies, too inexperienced. He should have been fully trained by now."
"Clinton, don't you see what you've done? You've murdered a man. Bjork worked for the section for 35 years, and you ordered his death. Do you not understand?"
"You know quite well that it was necessary. He betrayed us, and he would never have withstood the pressure when the police closed in."
Vardenshaw stood up.
"I'm not finished."
"Then we'll have to continue later. I have a job to do while you lie there, fantasizing that you're the Almighty."
"If you're so morally indignant, why don't you go to Boblansky and confess your crimes?"
"Believe me, I've considered it.
But whatever you may think, I'm doing everything in my power to protect the section."
He opened the door and met Nystrom and Sandberg on their way in.
"Hello, Frederick," Nystrom said. "We have to talk."
"Vardenshaw is just leaving."
Nystrom waited until the door had closed.
"Frederick, I'm seriously worried."
"What's going on?"
"Sandberg and I have been thinking. Things are happening that we don't understand. This morning, Salander's lawyer lodged her autobiographical statement with the prosecutor."
"What?"
Inspector Fuster scrutinized Advocate Giannini as Ekstrom poured coffee from a thermos carafe. The document Ekstrom had been handed when he arrived at work that morning had taken both of them by surprise. He and Fuster had read the 40 pages of Salander's story and discussed the extraordinary document at length. Finally, he felt compelled to ask Giannini to come in for an informal chat. They were sitting at the small conference table in Ekstrom's office.
"Thank you for agreeing to come in," Ekstrom said. "I have read this, account that arrived this morning, and there are a few matters I'd like to clarify."
"I'll do what I can to help," Giannini said.
"I don't know exactly where to start. Let me say from the outset that both Inspector Fuster and I are profoundly astonished."
"Indeed?"
"I'm trying to understand what your objective is."
"How do you mean?"
"This autobiography, or whatever you want to call it, what's the point of it?"
"The point is perfectly clear. My client wants to set down her version of what has happened to her."
Ekstrom gave a good-natured laugh. He stroked his goatee, an oft-repeated gesture that was beginning to irritate Giannini.
"Yes, but your client has had several months to explain herself. She hasn't said a word in all her interviews with Fuster."
"As far as I know, there is no law that forces my client to talk only when it suits Inspector Fuster."
"No, but I mean, Salander's trial will begin in 4 days' time, and at the 11th hour she comes up with this. To tell the truth, I feel a responsibility here which is beyond my duties as prosecutor."
"You do?"
"I do not wish to sound at all offensive. That is not my intention. But we have a procedure for trials in this country. You, Fru Giannini, are a lawyer specializing in women's rights, and you have never before represented a client in a criminal case. I did not charge Lisbeth Salander because she is a woman, but on the charge of aggravated assault and attempted murder. Even you, I believe, must have realized that she suffers from a serious mental illness and needs the protection and assistance of the state."
"You're afraid that I won't be able to provide Lisbeth Salander with an adequate defense,"
Giannini said in a friendly tone.
"I do not wish to be judgmental," Ekstrom said, "and I don't question your competence. I'm simply making the point that you lack experience."
"I do understand, and I completely agree with you. I am woefully inexperienced when it comes to criminal cases."
"And yet you have all along refused the help that has been offered by lawyers with considerably more experience,
at the express wish of my client."
Lisbeth Salander wants me to be her lawyer, and accordingly I will be representing her in court." She gave him a polite smile.
"Very well. But I do wonder whether in all seriousness you intend to offer this statement to the court."
"Of course. It's her story." Ekstrom and Faster glanced at each other. Faster raised his eyebrows. He could not see what Ekstrom was fussing about. If Giannini did not understand that she was on her way to sinking her client, then that certainly was not the prosecutor's fault. All they needed to do was to say thank you, accept the document, and put the issue aside. As far as he was concerned, Salander was off her rocker. He had employed all his skills to persuade her to tell them, at the very least, where she lived. But in interview after interview, that damn girl had just sat there, silent as a stone, staring at the wall behind him. She had refused the cigarettes he offered, and had never so much as accepted a coffee or a cold drink. Nor had she registered the least reaction when he pleaded with her, or when he raised his voice in moments of extreme annoyance. Faster had never conducted a more frustrating set of interviews.
"Fru Giannini," Ekstrom said at last, "I believe that your client ought to be spared this trial. She is not well. I have a psychiatric report from a highly qualified doctor to fall back on. She should be given the psychiatric care that for so many years she has badly needed."
"I take it that you will be presenting this recommendation to the district court."
"That's exactly what I'll be doing. It's not my business to tell you how to conduct her defence, but if this is the line you seriously intend to take, then the situation is, quite frankly, absurd. This statement contains wild and unsubstantiated accusations against a number of people, in particular against her guardian, Advocate Bureman, and Dr. Peter Teleborian. I hope you do not in all seriousness believe that the court will accept an account that casts suspicion on Dr. Teleborian without offering a single shred of evidence. This document is going to be the final nail in your client's coffin, if you'll pardon the metaphor."
"I hear what you're saying."
"In the course of the trial, you may claim that she is not ill and request a supplementary psychiatric assessment, and then the matter can be submitted to the medical board. But to be honest, her statement leaves me in very little doubt that every other forensic psychiatrist will come to the same conclusion as Dr. Teleborian. Its very existence confirms all documentary evidence that she is a paranoid schizophrenic."
Giannini smiled politely.
"There is an alternative view," she said.
"What's that?"
"That her account is in every detail true, and that the court will elect to believe it."
Ekstrom looked bewildered by the notion. Then he smiled and stroked his goatee.